So I hope you're having some fun in your meditation practice. And in case that sounds like totally the opposite of what's happening, I want to suggest some approach that might help a little bit. So one is really this encouragement to relax. So not to be striving to get something or get some particular state or have the mind behave a certain way, but really putting the effort very gently into just observing how things are. You know, what is the way that this body, this mind is showing up? And then being curious about the relationship that we're having to experience, whatever that experience is. And one of the areas that we often can get tangled up in is in the area of thinking. So thoughts and images and memories and plans, and primarily it only becomes a problem if we identify with it. So if we think the content of the mind is me, is mine, is owned by me, is my fault, anything like this. If we believe everything that comes through the mind, then it can become a problem. Or if we have some idea that good meditation is no thoughts and no activity of the mind, and bad meditation is when there's anything happening in the mind. So try to throw that view out if you can. So for many of us, you know, there's many experiences that we have of life, and the common way that we might relate to them is to like some of them and not like some of them. So, okay, here's an example. Like, let's suppose that all the experiences that you have are like this piece of paper here that I'm holding. So the body, the mind, everything like this. And then some of them we don't like having, so we want them to go away. So when it comes up, we have to push them away. Like, we don't like them. It doesn't, it's not in accord with who we think we are or what we want for our life. So for example, maybe anger comes up and we don't want to feel angry. We don't like to think of ourselves as angry person. So anger comes up, we have to push it away, we have to resist that. So then fold that away. And then maybe we don't like physical pain, right? We don't like any physical pain or physical discomfort. So we have to push that away when it comes up. Maybe we don't like to remember things that happened from our childhood. And that comes up, we have to push that away. Maybe we don't like to have sexual feelings. We feel like we're on retreat. We have to be good monks and nuns, so can't feel any attraction to anything, anyone. Push that away. Maybe we don't want to feel sadness. Maybe you think like, oh, that's not correct. I should be strong, not sad about things, right, like that. Maybe we feel hungry sometimes. We don't like to feel hungry. Quickly, we want to solve that, make it go away, right, like that. So you see what happens is then what you have to live in is this little tiny shape, and you just bounce off the walls like that. Boing, 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 boing. Right. So it's very tight, right? It's like actually very, that's not fun, right? It's not so much fun. You're very like enclosed. You've like captured yourself like that. So part of with mindfulness is we could start to recognize like, oh, awareness can meet any experience. We don't need to be afraid of any experience. Yeah, I'll hold this up so you can see. So then you don't need to be worried about any experience or push it away, because none of these things are inherently ours also. You know, they're all just in some ways like the weather patterns moving through. So then we could actually start to relax and allow like, oh, okay, this is hunger. Hunger is like this. It comes, it goes. Sadness is like this, right? Attraction like this, anger is like this, pain is like this, so on and so forth. And then, yeah, in some ways you get to just live with this whole experience that's there. So for example, you know, hunger, you might have woken up sometime hungry, and then if you're someone who's not used to hunger, then suddenly there could be panic, right? Like, ah, like what's gonna happen? like I'm gonna die. You know, the mind can become very hysterical about this and worried about it, and then like I have to go, you know, make tea and pour all the honey into the tea to keep my energy up so I don't pass out, and you know. But actually, like, human beings can live a fairly long time without food. Without water is not good. So drink water if you're thirsty. But, you know, I think you can live 3 days without water or something, but much longer without food for most of us, right? But it's only going to be a couple hours before you get food here, basically. So you don't need to worry too much. So the experience of hunger comes up, but then if we're not used to it, you know, then we don't like it. And so then we get like all tangled up about it. So our relationship to that is one of struggle, of aversion, of fear, like all this stuff. And then sometimes if we're not being aware, we don't notice that. You know, we don't notice like, oh, it's just this human experience. And there can be something good about allowing yourself to know what it's really like in all of these different human experiences. And for example, hunger is something that many, many human beings experience, right, every day, in many different countries, right? In the U.S. also, actually, there's a lot of people who are hungry, even though it's a very wealthy country. I think, like, maybe a quarter of the students in the public schools are on, like, public food assistance there, you know, like, so don't have good food at home. They get meals through the schools and stuff. And then many, many places, people are hungry, right? So what would it be like if we were able to know what that experience was like, you know? And it's not so hard if we know, like, oh, we're going to actually get to eat. It's not like we won't get to eat for weeks, you know. Like, what if we actually know so we can actually have compassion, we can have some empathy for what it's like for human beings who are hungry, you know? Like, why do we think we should never ever feel this feeling of hunger? And even it's not just for humans, but actually animals, you know? Like, the animals get hungry. They go looking for food. Sometimes they can find it. Sometimes they can't. So this is part of the experience of being alive in some way. So a friend of mine, Pascal, who's a Dharma teacher from Canada, he says this different emotions, different experiences, they're in the public domain. Right? So I don't know if you have this thing here, public domain. It's like... example is like some pictures or some music is like copyrighted, so somebody owns it, so you can't use it. But then some things are in the public domain, so like the song Happy Birthday to You is in the public domain, so you can sing that song. You don't have to pay someone to sing that song. It's like public. Or some pictures on the web you could find are like public domain. So even like some parks, you know, public domain. So basically it's sort of shared property of humanity. So you could consider like hunger, sadness, loneliness, joy. Basically everything that you experience is something that also has been experienced by another person in the past, and also is something that someone is experiencing right now as well, you know. So the mind can tend to collapse around things, you know, collapse and make this very personal. As if, like, only I am lonely, only I am sad, like, only I am hungry, you know. And then comes a big drama that gets created around it that's really totally unnecessary, you know. So if we can practice noticing, you know, this relationship that we have to experience, and notice when there's, like, this contraction that happens. You know, there's the basic experience of sadness, of hunger, loneliness, anything like that. And then there's sort of what, how are you relating to that? Can it just be as it is? Can the movement of energy arise and pass away? Or is there a way in which we take it personally, right? We kind of try to own what is in the public domain. You know, we make this the story of me only. And sometimes if it's hard, you could even reflect, you know, consciously reflect like, oh yeah, this is, whatever this is I'm feeling, this is being felt by many, many people at this time too. So anything that's happening to you, like you become part of, in some ways, the fellowship of this experience. So if you're hungry, you could think like, oh yeah, I'm part of this fellowship of hunger, you know. Like right now, there are people in many different places who are hungry, and At least I have a sense I will get some oatmeal in a few hours, but, you know, everyone doesn't have that benefit like that. Or if you feel lonely, you could think like, oh yeah, it's not just me feeling lonely. You know, right now there's some maybe elderly person who is alone. Maybe there's someone who is a soldier somewhere who's feeling lonely. Maybe there's a kid in school that doesn't have anyone to eat lunch with, feeling lonely. You know. Like, yeah, many, many people at the same time are feeling this, so are part of this, like, fellowship of loneliness in that moment. Or let's say you sprain your ankle, you know, you get an injury, and then you feel like, oh, only I have this thing. Feel sorry for yourself, right? And you become part of the fellowship of sprained ankles, actually, all over the world, or fellowship of flat tires from your car, or, you know. So if that reflection can help the mind to become more spacious around what's happening, then, yeah, it can allow that to happen, to help expand, and then just be with it as it is. So without trying to own it or make it different than what it is right now. We also don't need to feed it. So we don't need to push it away, but we also don't need to feed it. So don't make it more dramatic than it is. So if we can practice like this, then, yeah, it becomes more interesting, more fun even, to watch how things unfold. And it really is all just nature. So we can just see nature unfolding. And it's almost like, you know, in this week we've been here, there's something beautiful about seeing the change of the seasons. So I think it was very hot before, it's getting colder, a little rainy, the leaves are changing. So, yeah, it's just like that, everything that we can notice in the internal world as well as just nature. We can start to recognize ourselves more and more as just part of nature in this way, like everything coming, going. Also, as we pay attention to the experience in the field of thinking, the field of the mind, you might notice that the mind has no shame and will think anything. So the mind can think very beautiful thoughts, can think ridiculous thoughts, can think totally nonsensical thoughts, can think profound thoughts, can think thoughts about Dhamma, can rethink the same thing over and over and over again, very unproductively. If we start to pay attention to the way the mind works, we can also see the ways in which the world gets created through the mind. So here's some examples of things that happen on retreat. So this practice, this is insight meditation, or also called vipassana meditation. And a few common phenomena that happen on retreat. So one is where maybe you don't know people on the retreat, but maybe someone caught your eye and you think like, oh, I kind of like them. They seem very mindful. Yeah, I like how they walk, and yeah, they eat very mindfully also, and they dress in a very nice spiritual fashion, and then you start to imagine like, oh yeah, there's, after the retreat I'll talk to them, and we'll get along really well, and then maybe we're going to go on some mindful dates, and then eventually we'll have a mindful relationship, we'll move in, and make a nice mindful apartment with a nice altar like this. And so, you know, you have this whole scenario in your mind, and you don't know this person at all. You know, you've literally never heard them speak, or maybe you heard them say one thing in the beginning of the retreat, like, where is the salt, or something like that. But then based on this, like, you have created this whole world totally in your own mind, right, in which you're married to this person, and So we call this the Vipassana romance, right? Like it's all in your mind. You totally made it up. And then the other side is sometimes also some poor innocent retreatant who at some point has like cut you off in the line for food, or you were going to go to walk and they came to the place you wanted to walk first or something. And so then they become like the, we call Vipassana vendetta, like a, so enemy. And then suddenly like everything that they do, you know, you interpret as like insult to you or affront to you. So then you don't like the way that they walk, and you don't like the way that they eat, and you don't like their outfit, and you know, anything like that. And again, this is all in your mind, you know. This whole world has been created in the mind, and then we live in it. You know, we live in this world that's created, in which this imagined enemy or difficult person who's just trying to get along, doing their practice, minding their own business, you know. But we've created this world, right? So keep an eye on the mind, you know, see the ways in which these worlds get created, and they get created all the time, and then they collapse. They get created and they collapse. They get created and they collapse. And most of the time we just go along for the ride and we don't even know, you know. So there's a good story from Zen tradition of like somebody goes to a cave and they paint a picture of a tiger in the cave. And then they look at it and they go, ah, tiger, and they run out of the cave screaming. Right? So what happened? They forgot that they painted it themselves, right? Like they painted it, they believed in it, and then they got scared by it. So it seems funny, but actually you could notice when you're sitting how we do this over and over again in the mind. Like you're just sitting, breathing, no problem, nobody's bothering you. And then the mind paints some picture, some image of like, this person thinks this of me, right? Or this thing might happen in the future, right? It's not happening now, but it might happen. Like there might be a problem in the future. And then suddenly we're caught in that drama. You know, like we've bought into that. We bought the tickets to the movie. We're like off and running, worrying about it or struggling with it or running away from the tiger or any of this stuff, you know. Until maybe we wake up when the bell rings or we smell some food or, you know, something happens that we remember. Maybe someone coughs, you know, and then like, all right, okay. Yeah. Meditating here. Nirodha retreat. Okay, right. Come back. So it's good to see this, you know, like we don't need to hate ourselves for this happening, but just observe the way in which this is delusion. You know, this is the delusion that arises, and it impacts our experience of life. It's a, you know, living in make-believe, you know, living in imaginary world. And then interesting to see how this can happen sometimes. You know, like both ways. So there's one movie in the U.S. in which there was like a segment in which so a young man had fallen in love with someone in his office, and so then they show a segment where he's thinking about her and he's saying like, I love everything about her, like the way she walks. And they show her walking, the way she brushes her hair from her face, the way she smiles. They show the smile. The way she gets the tea. So then eventually they end up dating for a while, but then she dumps him, right? Like she finds someone else she wants to go out with. And then they have him thinking the same sequence, but he's like, I hate everything about her, right? The way she walks. And then this time they put a different music underneath of it, right? Before it was like beautiful music, and now it's like, da, 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 you know, very ominous. The way she walks, the way she pushes her hair, the way she smiles, the way she gets the tea, you know. So suddenly all of that is like terrible because he's been hurt by her, you know. So all of it is just as it is, right? It's just the mind interpreting it, you know, this way or that way, right? So it's helpful to see that, you know, see the way in which the world gets created. And then we react to that, we inhabit that, and then it collapses and then it comes again like that. So yeah, part of the practice is realizing how crazy you are. But not just you, like everybody is. But it's helpful. It's helpful to start to get a handle on this, because then you can basically take the mind with a grain of salt, they say. So basically don't believe everything you think, you know. And the quicker we can kind of catch on to this, then yeah, maybe the less time we have to spend in these caves of delusion, you know, painting the pictures and believing it and all that stuff. And then, yeah, maybe the more we can spend in actually engaging with the world, engaging with people, how they are, you know, not our ideas of how they are or how they should be. Yeah, so if we can practice in this way, maybe, yeah, take a little bit lightly and just very gently bring this awareness to each moment. And don't take it personally, however many times you get fooled by the mind. You know, just when you wake up, like, oh, okay, look at that. In some ways, it's helpful to be humbled by the power of these patterns, you know. You get humbled by how strong the conditioning patterns of the mind are. You know, how real it seems. Each time. So in this way, we can develop some wisdom and have wise relationship to this area of thoughts and thinking, objects of the mind. And we can notice when we are grasping after experiences or pushing them away. So all of this leads to development of wisdom and more freedom of the heart, freedom of the mind, and more, yeah, being more accessible, more access. So we can sit together and see what happens.